YPP.
TY.
It's been a little while since I turned this rig on. I was just wondering how it sounded.
Nice and clear and hitting the repeater good. Where are you at?
In Belton, South Carolina.
Yep, you're coming in nice and clear. I'm in Taylor's.
Roger that. My name's Bill. That's Bravo Indigo Lima Lima. Pleasure to meet you.
My name is Daniel, Delta Alpha N. Rig on in a while. Does that mean you haven't really been on the radio that much?
I've been driving my wife's Expedition and not my truck. I decided to jump in the truck today, so turned it on. And sometimes this Yaesu, it goes back to a narrow band by itself, an FT2800M. Sometimes it goes back to narrow band. I wasn't hitting the Anderson repeater, and I was going, maybe, I guess the Anderson repeater's down right now.
Yep, that's probably why I drive my truck more than anything, just because I had the radio in it.
Listening to radio and talk radio and everything else, I turn this on once in a while. Gets my mind off things.
Sometimes I'd rather just turn on the radio and just hear what's going on, even if I'm not talking.
You operator for a long time, or just relatively new thing for you?
A new thing for me, I got my license back in March of this year, so I'm pretty new, and even new to actually be talking on it. I'm trying to get the handle of it a little bit better, but been actually communicating and everything since August.
My radio license for, well, probably close to 20 years now, but I actually let it expire by a month and had to retest again just to get it back. That wasn't bad, though. I did it online. So take the test online and proctor the exam. It was nice. It was nice, quick, easy. I hate now they're charging so much more to get a testing or get an upgrade.
You know what? They changed that, too?
Involved. That's why it got changed. The FCC is deciding to charge you $35, I think it is, to have any kind of changes made to your license.
Dang. I had heard that they were going up, but I was unsure what it actually ended up being. So $35, that's crazy. Yep. Don't you love the government?
I didn't pay that. I did mine before that, but that's what I heard on the radio. I heard some operators talking about it and saying, if you want to test, you need to test before this date because they're going to charge $35 to do your licensing paperwork.
I think in March I paid $15, I think it was.
I paid. Did you do it online or did you go to a place?
It's downtown Greenville, and it just so happened that they opened, and I was one of the first guys there to take the test. It was the first time they had opened up to live testing, so I lucked out because I really didn't want to do it online if I didn't have to.
I took college online, so I was familiar with the proctored exams and all that, but the funny thing about it is they make you use your phone and the computer, so the computer camera is going to be used and your phone is going to be set up next to you so it can watch you too. So it's and then it's the time test. So I don't know. It was a little. It was easy though. It wasn't a problem. So are you a tech? Is that your license or are you above that?
I'm tech over here. I actually was trying to study for the upgrade, but with life, it just hasn't worked out that well. Bill, what was your call sign again? Because I missed it.
Foxtrot 4, Yankee Papa Papa. That's my original one I got 20 years ago. I got a Tech Plus. I got some code in there. I just missed, I just couldn't get that 13 words a minute they wanted. I got 10 words a minute, couldn't get the rest of it. But, and then I let it lapse, and they gave me some other call sign, and I actually got this one. I went and got a vanity back to my original. KF4YPP.
I said you were able to get it back?
If it was your call sign, you don't have to wait a certain amount of time. It's like a year to get it. But if it was your original call sign and it hadn't gone into the bank yet to be scooped up by somebody else, I just got partial to it because my new call sign, I kept wanting to say my old one when I got on the radio. So I went to the website, the FCC website, and did a vanity call sign. And they gave it right back to me. No problems at all.
Grandpa was a ham radio operator, but I could not find his call sign at all. I'm sure he let it lapse, and by the time I even knew that he was a ham radio operator, I'm sure that too much time had passed for me to even find it.
So, and if it was a long time ago, I don't know if their records would even have it right, you know?
Yeah, somebody was telling me I could ask an older ham operator that had a book, and they may have his call sign in there, but I haven't found anybody that has an old call book. I believe he probably let it lapse back in the late 80s.
Find some old-timer who had a stack of books next to in his radio shack.
Yeah, that place. I think there's, five left?
It was ham radio shack, but yeah, I think there's about only five radio shacks left, and you're about right on that.
You reminded me of radio shack. I do a lot of electronics, and so I kind of miss it every now and then.
Electronics I've messed with have been out of necessity. You know, motherboard goes bad in a computer, or your radio kicks out, and you start opening up looking for a bad cap or something, you know?
My monitor for my computer went out, and I just reordered some recaps for it, and I ended up just changing all the caps out because I went with a higher grade product to try to make it last longer.
Worked on it was a really nice computer. I had a lot of RAM, and I don't even remember what it was now, but it was a quad core, high speed. You know, I got it refurbished. So there was a software conflict between the hard drive they had put in originally. So they were all recalled. So they were out there. It was only a couple months old when I got it. And I was like, yeah, all right. So they blew some caps in it. And I swapped them all out and dug on it. If I can't get it upgraded without paying for Windows. So it's sitting there. The tower's just sitting up in my office. And it doesn't get used. I use a laptop now.
I'm in the same boat. I got a computer right now because I'm a video editor, and it's starting to give me some problems, and I'm trying to figure out what's going to be my alternative here. Do I really want to have to upgrade? I really don't want to have to, but, yep, I hear you there.
Hey, did you ever consider going to Linux? You can get that free, and it's pretty clean software. I've actually got it on one of my laptops, older one.
Last I was in a little hole, so I didn't really hear you that much.
Have you ever considered using Linux, like Ubuntu software? It's shareware. It's a pretty good system. It kind of mimics Windows, and it's pretty clean for the operating system. There's not a lot of bloat to it, and it's pretty secure. I've got it on an older laptop. It seemed to work fine to me.
To hear you say that. So my brother's a programmer, and he's actually talked about building me a Linux system for a little while. I currently run Macs since most of the editing and Photoshop stuff always seem to run a little bit better for me on Mac. But no, that's funny. I have considered doing Linux, but Mac's been changing some of their stuff to make it a little bit more difficult.
Like the price tags on Macs and Apple products, it used to be they had something really good that they were, and I think the biggest part of that was their software. There was no bloat to it. It was much cleaner than the Windows operating systems.
That's why I switched over to Mac, back in 2001, 2002, and I just always loved it. And, yeah, they've kind of They've kind of kicked our butt lately, but it's been hard for me to switch over. I got so much money invested into the Mac system with programs and hardware that it's hard for me to switch now, but who knows, I may.
Whiskey Uniform 2 Tango Mobile.
Whiskey, I didn't catch the rest of it. This is KF4YPV. I'm following up at the home site. It was good talking to you, Dan. I appreciate you coming back. I'm going to be clear on your final.
That sounds good, Bill. It was nice talking to you, sir. And have a great day. This is KI4DTY. I'll be on the site.
DFW Mobile. What are you up to, Rusty? Grocery store where my pocketbook became a whole lot lighter. Of course, I've been up to Landrum today, and somebody bought my lunch up there at Stone Soup Cafe, which was good, and got a bunch of business taken care of, and now I'm headed home. Told my dog I'd be home by 2 o'clock, and it's now after 4, so I'm going to be a little bit late, you think?
They're going to be glad to see you, and then they're going to be mad because you're late, right?
It's about time for them for her to get supper, so I'll let her out, take care of business, and I'll bring her back in, and then I'll feed her supper, and she'll be happy. Of course, I got to unload these groceries now, and that really hurt when I went in there today. I didn't expect to spend that much, but I forgot I had to buy dog food and a few other things that were a little bit pricey today.
Going up, and everything's getting hard to get. I know I work in spare parts all day, and it's just getting worse and worse. I'm just not seeing any end to it.
It's a lot of the things are just being held up for one reason or another, and some of them are being held. Primarily, a lot of the stuff that's being held up, not being gotten, is the fact that all these folks are sitting home on their butts getting this free money and not working at all instead of getting out there and earning some money. And I think they ought to do away with that program all together, make these folks go out and work. There are a lot of jobs out there these days.
To go to a business looking for a job that wasn't hiring. I believe everybody's hiring, and a lot of the business are saying, where did all the people go? But you're exactly right. And then I do away with all that assistance in skinny minute.
But unemployment went up this week, KO4HKX.
You didn't have to mention that. You didn't have to mention that. Boo hiss. Well, I'll tell you what, I've been trying to get a contractor over to do some repairs in my house, including some roof work, and they're all telling me 4 to 6 months before they can even get here. And so, you know, hopefully I'm not going to have any more leaks in my roof, but, you know, you never know. And, we'll deal with it. Go ahead, station just cut in there. I forgot who that was. Jumping in there and running.
They're saying roofing supply is going to be in, especially shingles, going to be hard to come by in a little bit because some of the raw materials for them are getting harder and harder to get. And then now I saw there's a paint shortage and a glass shortage, and I don't know what isn't in a shortage these days.
And figure out how all of these companies that are building these subdivisions are getting the supplies to build the subdivisions. There's one over here near me where they're finishing up. There's another one out on Reedville Road where they're building a new apartment complex. I came by a place today where they've started clearing land for another home, another subdivision somewhere. And, you know, where are all the people coming from with the money to buy these houses and things or rent these apartments? I looked at a place the other day. Rent was starting in one apartment complex, $1,400 a month. I can't afford that for rent, not for an apartment. Oh, I'm glad I'm in a house, got my house. I'm planning not to worry about getting shingles because I'm planning to have a metal roof put on my house when I have it done.
There you go. You know, you see all these houses going up. Like you said, they're just, you know, twice the price they ought to be. And you don't know where they're getting the wood, but just where are these people working at that can afford that? Because, I mean, there's so many businesses needing people. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, this subdivision over here, they're getting the last 15 houses or so over here that they're pouring the slabs for the floor. In fact, I come along here now and I see 9, 10, 11 more that are framed up, and two more that are framed that don't have the roofs on them are the second floor yet. And they're building all of this stuff over here. And what I want to know is how they're doing all of this and everything. And it looks like they're planning to do some work on this road over here, because I noticed they've got all kinds of barrels and things out here. Must be planning to cut some driveways in or something. I don't know. Oh, well, and everything. But, yeah, like I said, I'm planning to go with a metal roof when I have mine replaced, and that'll probably help with my making my antennas that go over the house work a little better.
Yeah, but you're probably right. Kind of wish I'd went with a metal one when I had mine redone about 7 or 8 years ago.
Well, when I had mine done about 20 years ago now, they weren't offering metal. Metal roofs back then were still way too expensive. They've come down in price, so they're not a whole lot more than shingle roofs. And and they still got to do whatever they got to do to the bottom, to the base, you know, to make sure that the boards are in there good. The sheeting in there is good. So, we'll see what happens when it comes. And maybe before winter settles in, I can get it re-roofed and get some other repairs done, you know.
You can find some contractors. Like you said, anybody that is working is so booked up. I mean, you can't get anything. And I work in spare parts. Everything that was, 1 week out, now it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then there's all kinds of delays, and you just can't never plan on any of it. But all those new subdivisions going in over there by you, I hope they work on the roads. Man, over here in Greer, they got all these subdivisions, and the roads are just terrible now.
Well, my section of road that goes down in front of my house, they have just recently finished repaving this entire section of road. And they come back the other day where they raised the road level so much higher. They come back here the other day and built up yesterday and the day before. And today they finished building up the side of the road. So the side of the road was pretty much back up to the level of the ground out there was much back up to the level of the rest of the road. So we'll see what's happening here. And the utility crew back out here, they're now running the wire between all of these new poles they put up here for the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Once was an enjoyable ride for you, like out through the country or whatever. It's now just going to be all a big traffic jam. You won't even be able to pull out of a side street.
I arrived home at my house, and I need to get inside and unload things because I've got frozen foods and stuff and meat that needs to go in the fridge and the freezer and all that stuff. So let me get out of here. I'm getting in here, pulling in. I'm parked right here, so I'm going to say 73s, and we'll catch you later. WU2T clear.
73, Rusty. Have a good evening. KN4 TFW.
Rusty. Hey, Ken.
Hey, you must have been headed to your black hole when I called out a while ago.
No, I was just pulling into my last stop and said you were waiting on customers. Had to jump back and do something right quick. KO4 HKX.
N0TR.
Hey, here.
Hi, Ken. Hi, Patrick. Just wanted to say good afternoon. We're just out for a little ride here. If this guy will get on the right side of the yellow lines. Boy, that's two so far. I think this must be the walk among us day.
That's about every day. Good afternoon, Bernice.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Miss Bernice.
Well, we're just going to go up here to Chad's and drop off an envelope because I can't get near him. He has to keep going in and checking his mother-in-law and that, so it's driving him crazy. He had to get out of the house this afternoon and go for a drive. I don't know where he wound up at. Probably the insane junction. Being tied down is a booger, especially for a guy like him.
You're missing him on the morning crew.
Or he's a very hard worker. I'll give him that. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, he stays busy or on the go doing something, helping somebody. And, yeah, I heard you and him talking earlier today, but I didn't want to interrupt.
No problem. Everybody's welcome. And we're just visiting there. I didn't know he was getting out. Wow, what is that down there? There's a field down here on the way over there, and it is full of those big, huge motor homes. Must be having some kind of jamboree or something. They're just out in the pasture. Mount Lebanon Road, and we're coming up on a real pretty church with a beautiful steeple on it. I was trying to... Mount Lebanon Church, obviously.
You're familiar with that. He lives up towards where Campobello, Cowpen, somewhere's up there, doesn't he?
Yeah, in the Tooley's years, we called it in Kansas. It's listed as Campobello.
Yeah, up there at exit 80 on 85, that's starting to get close to there.
Right to the east, I would call it, of Highway 14, he's only 5.8 miles from us. And we're listed as Greer, but... if you know where Gap Creek Road is, we just live down that ways, a little ways from 14 on, off of Gap Creek on Brown Road.
Here I head up that way when we're going to that little O'Neill Convenience Center.
Well, how's your day, Patrick?
Good. It's been a little slow, but it's not been that bad, so I'm not complaining at all.
Go ahead, Tim.
Bad second half. First half, had to go to, from up there at exit 80, had to go all the way down to Simpsonville on 385 this morning to pick up something. It's like, man, that 85 was terrible.
Terrible. Go ahead,
Patrick. Yeah, that was what I was going to say. When is that not terrible?
Since I had to go down that way, and it's, I remember why I don't like going that way. KN4TFW.
N0TR. Yeah, gentlemen, I need to get out of here and start putting my Mark II eyeball on these mailboxes. I just wanted to leave Mr. Chad maybe a little bit of cheer. He's had it rough here the last few days. 73s. Have a good afternoon and be safe. N0TR.
Have a good day. 73, Bernice.
Miss Bernice, y'all have a good afternoon. Stay safe out there on these roads.
Building that brand new car lot down here in Greer on 29. I reckon where they think they're going to get the cars from.
I have no clue. Where are they building that at? On the other side of D&D?
A street from it, kind of right next to the Toyota. I forget what the manufacturer was going to be.
It's got everything already there, so...
And to have a brand new car lot, no cars to put on it.
I think I would have held up on building that at this point in time.
Supply gets back, but what's that going to be, a couple of years on a maybe?
Unless whatever manufacturer it is can guarantee them a full lot.
Oh, you know, even the major players, their lots are pretty empty.
Kia and Hyundai place today there on 29, and if you look on the lots and pay attention, it's all used cars. I didn't see hardly any new cars at all.
Ain't any out there. Like I said, my buddy, he knew somebody that went looking for new cars, and the lot they went on only had two.
I'm here, and it's going to be a while before anything changes in that market.
Maybe they had heard that you couldn't buy a new truck unless you traded one.
That, but I haven't asked either.
They buy a used one, they want three times what it's really worth.
Used car right now is bringing a premium price, that's for sure. Hop off here. Customer just walked in. KN4HKX, I'll talk to you later. 73.
Have a good evening. KN4TFW.
JW, KN4VWA.
KN4VWA, W4DJW. Got three microphones up here. Had to launch another one. I already had two. So that's why it took me a little while. I'm making progress, but I'm not there yet.
Been long on everything I've been trying to do today. I got my steel and I got my feed line, but everything has been running long. I don't know what it is. Traffic out here this evening is just ridiculous. It's almost bumper to bumper out here at Wade Hampton and Taylor's, but, and that's where I am. So what's your status? What do you think, boss?
W4DJW. I wouldn't know. I've been keeping one eye on the clock while I go through the putting the 70 centimeter on there. It wouldn't communicate like the 900 megahertz, and it would communicate. But when I went to 70, it wouldn't. So eventually I thought about just bypassing everything and go straight to the telemetry port with the 70 centimeters, and that worked. Then I started backtracking. It goes through the video camera and the on-screen display and several other things, a Minim OSD, so it has a heads-up overlay on top of the video camera, and then eventually the video transmitter. So there's a whole bunch of junk in between the telemetry radio and the flight controller. I bypassed it all. Works great. Backing through it, as I was going through it and adding one component at a time, I found out this flight controller for these radios go up to 500 milliwatts, whereas the other ones only went up to 100 milliwatts. I'm overloading that telemetry port at some point, and that's why it wouldn't communicate. So I just got the bright idea about 10 minutes ago. I got two telemetry ports, so I'm going to put all the video and everything on one telemetry port, and I'll put the telemetry radio on the other telemetry report, and I'll see if that works. So that's where I am, and it's 4:30. So I got my honeydew all done. That's finished. But now I'm thinking we're probably not going to have enough time left once I get this figured out. I think I have it figured out, and then I'll run into something else. So I'd say we schedule it for tomorrow, earlier in the day tomorrow, unless you got something going on.
Well, when you started into the ports and all that business and reassignments, that's going to take you some time. And you need to be confident. This is not one of those, okay, it worked once, I think I've got it, let's go try it. No, you need to really push it through several times and be happy, fat and happy, and sassy with it, and be confident. I agree, tomorrow's going to be the day. Because, see, I'm still pushing to get to the house, and it's 20 minutes to 5, so I don't know that I'm going to make it, you know, by no 5:30 the way it's going with this traffic. So I tell you what, let's do. Now, I've got a little project that I need to start tomorrow morning early. I've got to get this steel bent so that I can have it ready to go for Monday. And when my buddy Bob, ND7J, comes down, after he finishes with this boom lift, I'm going to use it the rest of the day. We're both splitting it. He's going to use it half a day. I'm going to have half a day for Monday. So I've got one little thing to do in the morning. I'm going to let this drop. Morning, I need to go bend this steel, which is going to take about 5 minutes. I'm going to do that about 8 o'clock. And then I'm going to run on over to my office building and be there at about 8:30 to take some measurements. And I got to have a door repaired and get some information there so I can pick up the right materials. And then beyond that, I'm thinking noon, I'm going to be free as a bird.
Okay, that'll give me time to get everything loaded up and do some testing. Oh, by the way, I did notice while I was doing that, when it was on its own port and it was on 70 centimeters, that the 900 megahertz radio, which before was only getting, so it's got a RSSI received signal strength indicator, and it's got a VF frame rate, whatever it is, whatever the frame rate is. Anyway, they used to be around 60 or 70%. And I was always wondering, why is that 900 megahertz not 100%? Well, switching this telemetry over from 900 megahertz to 70 centimeters, it went, the 900 megahertz radio, the FreeSky command radio, went to 100% on both the valid frame rates, VFR. The VFR, valid frame rate, is 100%, and so is the RSSI, received signal strength indicator. So, problem solved. I just got to get everything spread across two ports now instead of one. That's the big deal. So noon will work fine for me. And I'll just eat lunch a little bit early before we go out so I won't be hungry. And I'll be too excited to get sleepy after that.
There you go. Now, was the frame rate improvement pre or post port reassignment?
It was post getting the 900 megahertz radios off of the flight controller. So the two 900 megahertz radios are sitting over here to the side. And I'm working now with 70 centimeter telemetry radios. So 440. So I went from 900 megahertz to 440. And so when I unplugged the 900 megahertz radios from the copter and from the ground station, when they were unplugged and no longer turned on, the frame rate on the 900 megahertz for the command radio just bumped all the way to 100%.
So spread the workload. All right. That sounds great. What about, it really can't shift the battery usage any. Just because you're using a second port, you're still assigning it the same amount of workload. The only difference is spread across the two ports. So you're not going to shift any power loads or anything like that. It sounds like you ought to be about good to go as soon as you can get the other functions up.
That's the same thing I'm thinking, but I've done that 10 times so far today. And every time I run into something different. Like when I found out that one thing I did was I just took the two radios off of the copter and off of the ground station. And I put one radio on one computer and another radio on another computer. I said, okay, you guys talk to each other. And they talked to each other just fine. No problem. Right? I could control one from one computer and control the local one on its computer and the remote one on the other computer from my single computer. And I could do it from either side. And so, you know, just chipping away at it like that all day, you know, well, since I got back, it took me till 3 o'clock to get my honeydew done, but that's done. So, yeah, I'm thinking tomorrow at noon would be good, and you're right. I do need to make sure it's all working and that I didn't miss anything before we go back out there tomorrow. But I figure we'll get back out there and try to slow it down a little bit and try to do some follow me out there. With it going like 11 miles an hour or 12 miles an hour or something like that. Really, really slow. Try to do some follow me. But the sun will be over there too. We'll have to take that into consideration too. But anyway, tomorrow's a good day, I think. W4DJW.
Okay. The only thing will be, with the sun up, the follow me is going to be a little more difficult because of the brightness of the sun. And, you know, that's not using my Cessna where you can follow the strobe.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That is going to be a problem. And the solution to that problem is that's the reason they came up with goggles. That's the whole reason, because the ambient, the photons and the ambient lighting just saturate your screen. And you can't see. you just can't see the little tiny objects on there. But if you put goggles on, that blocks out all the ambient light. And now you can see the screen like you were inside. And when I look at the video from yesterday, I can spot it plain as day. I see it moving up and I see me moving away from it because I can't find it. But when I'm sitting right here with it right in front of my face, I see it just fine. With the goggles on, I think we'll be able to see it just fine. But if I put the goggles on, then you have to be, then legally, you have to be standing over there at the ground station and keep an eyeball on, I mean, it's not that far away. It's not that hard to see, but you got to legally keep an eyeball on, you know, line of sight vision to the chopper. We got to keep that legal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's my function. That's what I'm there for. I've already dug out my optics. So, you know, even if we get over there in front of the tree line, you know, I should still be able to spot it with the optics that I've got. I should be able to pick it out even if it goes into that non or low contrast area in front of the trees. So, you know, if you're doing a small loop, so anyhow, yeah, man, I'm there. We're good.
That's good because those trees are anywhere from an eighth to a quarter of a mile away, and you wouldn't think that. But when you see it flying that far away and it gets tiny and it's tiny and it's tiny and it's still, and you look down on the ground station and you're only halfway to the trees. And it's like a little tiny mosquito way out there. It's only an eighth of a mile to the trees and it's a quarter mile out there to those trees. I didn't realize they were that far away. We got a really good flying field out there. That's a lot of space.
Well, but see, here's the thing. Do you remember when the, what did he call that? The Viper. The blue Viper went down on fly-in day? Well, when he was coming across, he was trying to clear the top of the trees. I just felt that he wasn't going to clear them. And when that thing went down behind the trees, even that bright blue, I lost the visual contrast aspect from the naked eye. It just disappeared. We had trouble finding that Viper down in those trees, even after we got down there. And we were using somebody that had marked the spot from the field and was directing us. So that visual aspect, you know, for contrast, there's nothing bright on your quad, man. So, yeah, I've got these binoculars that I think will really help me.
Okay. And I would put a strobe on there, but when I did that with Michael back in 2014, he could see it, he could find it and zoom in on it. He had goggles on, and I had goggles on. That's before the FAA made that rule that says you had to have a spotter. That's when we were both flying with goggles on. And he could see me, but it dragged my battery down really. I mean, that's a bright light I'd burn my battery up twice as quick as he'd burn his battery up. So we got to figure out another way. A strobe isn't the answer. That just consumes too much electricity. But I didn't know the Viper went down in those trees over on the trees over on the right. If you're facing the runway, you're in the middle of the runway. We're talking about the trees over on the right.
No. When the Viper went down, all right, picture this. I'm standing right in front of the shed, the metal shade shed, and he is coming from the right, just past the tree line, to the left. And if you get maybe 10 degrees off of straight ahead to the left, that's where he went into those trees. So when we went straight ahead through the gate, we had to turn left and go down in there to the corner of that pasture over there to the left, and that's where the Viper went in over there. And even with it as bright a blue, the color of those trees and the density of those trees just consumed it.
Well, that's something else. Is that that pasture over there, do you see cows in it? Because when I was flying the other day, when I looked at the video, I didn't realize it, but the multirotor picked up cows in that pasture over there.
Went straight ahead of the runway?
If you're standing, like, where the pilots fly, not in front of that metal shed, but up the hill a little way, and you look straight across the runway, it's straight across and to the right just a little bit, maybe off about 10 or 15 degrees, that pasture over there. If you go over the hill, which we can't see over the hill, but if you fly out over there, the multirotor could see over the hill, and they could see those cows running around. Is that where he went down, or was it further toward the end of the runway?
All right, you know the hangars? If you come in your vehicle and you come to the end of the hangars right before you turn right to come up to where we park, if you're right there at the end of that hangar and you look straight ahead, that's where he went in. He was trying to get right over that little gap in those trees right there and cross that gap and try to pancake it into the thick grass because he knew good and well he wasn't going to make the runway. He was just trying to clear the trees and clear right over that little gap in the trees straight ahead of the end of the hangar and there at that end where that 150 is.
Okay, I know what you're talking about now. Those trees are a lot closer in. So he almost made it. I mean, that's not a quarter of a mile away. That's probably more like about 300, 500 feet away.
I'm not sure how far it is, but see, if you look off maybe 10 to 15 degrees to the right at the furthest excursion of the trees, straight ahead of the shed, the farthest point back where the trees are, that's where he experienced the flame out. And he was already low. Visually, you could see maybe 1 inch between the top of the trees and his aircraft. And as he came to the left, he tried to clear the top of the trees to try to get back over onto the property into that tall, thick grass. It just did not make it.
And it was the blue ones, because there was a red one and a blue one. They posted on their Facebook page the event. There was a lot of film, so somebody was filming a lot while they were out there. And they didn't post the crash, so I knew there was a red one and there was a blue one. And the blue one is the one that came up in the second film, not the first film. But I didn't know which one it was that crashed. I hate that for him. That was a pretty airplane.
It was called a Viper. It's not exactly a scale, but it looked like an A4F airframe. And the other one was called a Scorpion. And it also looked sort of similar to a A4F airframe. But, it was heartbreaking when we saw that thing go in, Dave. It really was. He said that was right at about... Yeah, I think he said
$16,000. Well, he knew that when every one of those dollars that he put down on it, he knew what the consequences could be. Because I mean, it's going to happen. It's not if it's going to. I mean, if you fly it, if you put it on the wall, it's not going to happen. But if you fly it, eventually it will crash.
Get any less heartbreaking, baby? I'm telling you. Oh. Me. But, I really felt for the guy. When we got it back up to the field, the two firemen that were there on site, they helped us go down there and get it. And when we got it back up there, he, you know, popped the top, looking down in there. The turbine would turn, but not turn freely. And pretty much the electronics on the main frame down the very, very center of the fuselage looks completely untouched, undamaged. One of the guys asking said, well, how much of that do you think you'll reuse? He says, well, which one of these components caused my flame out? Does that answer your question?
He doesn't know. So, none of them, right?
He said he would scrap it out, sell it used, scrap it all out, start all over.
Yeah, Mac Hodges and Dan Stevens down in Americus, Georgia used to come up here all the time. He's had one of the biggest hobby shops in the land, and he flew a B-29 with an X-1 underneath the wing. And he'd take it off and get it really high and drop it, and Dan would fly the X-1 down to the ground, and it had a rocket engine, you know, the kind that the rocket guys launch rockets with. And he would bring it, it'd glide all the way down the X-1, and it'd land, and everybody was thinking he was going to land, and that was over with, and then he'd fire that rocket, and it would go right back up there with the B-29. It's pretty cool. Anyway, he was doing that out at Hartness's show, the Joe Nall, one year, and the engines on the left quit on takeoff. And it arced up and over and went right into the crowd, right next to a tent where there was a woman with a baby. And nobody got hurt. But that opened Mac's eyes really, really big. I saw him out at Joe Nall the year after that and asked him if he's going to build another one, because he always had a B-29. That was his signature airplane. And his big B-29. I mean, you walk past the rudder, and the rudder's about eyeball level. That's how tall it is off the ground. When it's just sitting there on the ground, the top of the rudder's about eyeball level. It's huge. But he said he's not going to – he said – coming that close to that mother and her small baby, he decided that's the end of that. He's not going to build any more airplanes like that again. That's just too dangerous. I guess he had an AMA exception or something like that, because it was way over the limit on weight. You'd ask him how much does that weigh, and he'd say about 100 pounds. And in reality, it was probably about 230 pounds.
Wow. Well, let me ask you something now. Pat used to fly a large bomber, you know, 20-something, 30 years ago. That's not the same one. This guy Hodges, he's not the one that helped Pat build his, is it?
W4TJW. I don't think it would be. It wouldn't surprise me if Pat built one himself like that, or somebody in his family built them. He does that all the time. He's got a shop out there at Triple Tree that's got full scale and model aviation side by side. And he builds whatever he wants. And if he doesn't want to build it, he'll have somebody else build it. But I don't think Dan passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. He passed away. And that's probably another reason Mac's not building one, because Dan did the bulk of the work. And there's no plans, there's no kit or anything like that for an airplane like that. And Dan knew really good. He was military. I don't think Mac was military, but Dan was. And Dan knew him inside and out. And he knew the measurements. He knew reality on the B-29. He knew it personally. And I don't know that they would come up here and build one for Pat. I don't think they would do that. I doubt it.
Pat's was quite as big as what you're talking about. I think Pat's, the wingspan might have been 8 feet, and the tail would have stood probably mid-chest on me. It would not have been at my eye level. And it was a big one, and he used to fly it, but I think he retired that thing probably around 90 or 95, might have been even 2000, but I wonder if Pat still has his ticket, because Pat used to get out there and play with his steerman all the time when it was up at Greenville, before he moved all that down to the airport he built down there. I wonder if he still got his steerman.
That airport down there is called Triple Tree, but there's only two of the three trees still standing. There was three enormous trees when he built that place, and so he called it Triple Tree because of those three big trees. And then one of the three died, and it had to be cut down because it was dangerous. But there's two trees left standing. I don't know. I don't recall him having one like that. The one Dan built was probably a 23-foot wingspan, something like that. It was huge. The diameter of the fuselage was probably 2.5 feet in diameter. I don't know. It was big. Oh, yeah, and another thing that was interesting about it, when you get lines that long, servo cables going out to control surfaces that are that long, you get all kinds of strange things start happening, right, because they become antennas. And they pick up, and that yellow line that's in there, or the white one, depending on what kind of radio you have, is a signal line. And it's very, very sensitive to noise. And so one of the things that they did was, and it's unique to that airplane, ever heard of anybody else doing that, they put three receivers on that airplane. And the left wing, with all of its landing gear, it's had one of the landing gears in the left wing, a flap in the left wing, an aileron in the left wing, and their fuel flow. All of that was on one receiver. And then the fuselage had its own receiver for, you had two engines on that left wing. And then you had two engines on the right wing, and you had the landing gear and the flap and the aileron. It had its own receiver. And then the fuselage that had the elevators and the rudder, it had its own receiver. So there was no servo wires running between, you know, up and down the length of the run, of the, you know, 22-foot long servo wires. They just weren't there. Everything was just local for that. And they bound three different receivers to one radio. That was a pretty good idea. That's smart. Those guys are they're peanut farmers down there, but they are very intelligent.
To estimate the smarts of a good old boy that wants to figure something out.
That's absolutely correct. Anyway, it was impressive. I really liked watching him fly that, because he'd fly it like it was a fun fly model. I mean, the Mac was just that good. He'd do rolls right off the edge of the runway. The airplane would be no more than 15 or 20 feet high, and that bottom wing, when that wing would come under, it'd give like 2 feet above the runway as it was rolling. This is a B-29. This is an enormous airplane. That's how good he was.
Folks like that know that, you know, it is inevitable that something like that is going to be destroyed at some point, and, you know, they just accept it, and they go out, and they fly it, and they have fun with it, because that's what it was built for, and they try to extend the fun as long as they can, but, you know, they push them to the limit.
He's the one that has a brother named Billy that my son and I were standing out there on the runway. They had two flight lines going. We were down there in competition. We were standing on the runway, and Billy came by in his full-scale airplane, and he banks it really sharp, and that one wing is really low, and it kind of in a curve a little bit so that it holds it up a little bit. The centrifugal force is holding it up. And he goes past us, probably 250 miles an hour, that one wing down. And that wing probably went with about 20 feet from me and my son. And there was other people out there, too. Him and his brother put together they built their own airplane when they were kids. And it would fly. They would get in it and fly. And it broke on Billy when Billy was flying at one time. And he ran into a bank, and it put him in the hospital. And he stayed in the hospital for 6 months. He was all busted up, but he got repaired after a while and came back out, and he's right back at it. They're crop dusters too, so they're in airplanes, crop dusters. You know, they're like flying 2 feet off the ground all day long, day after day after day. They go up and do a wing over and come back down 2 feet off the ground with a fully loaded airplane crop dusting. I think that's where they got all their experience with airplanes. W4DJW.
Have fun too, but you know what? Sometimes folks' filters that say we're approaching the limit are set just a little too far. Well, listen, I've got to jump off here. That's the boss calling, and I'm going to see what the next thing on the schedule is. So I will be in touch tomorrow, probably hopefully around 11:30 or 12 o'clock. 73 is K4VWA. Clear up your final.
Sounds good. Good talking to you. Talk to you tomorrow. Game 4 VWA, W4 DJW clear.